You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and big-time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I am Mike McGivern alongside my co-host this week and special guest, Dr. Eric Pfeiffel. Doc, how are you?
I'm well. How's it going today, Mac?
Good. It's good to see you.
Great to be here.
Hey, this is our last show for a bit. We'll be back in August.
Sounds great.
Right for the start of high school football. And I love the fact that you're in for the last one. I really appreciate your help as we've gotten through the show, and we're going to take a little bit of a break, get back in August, and I'm just really happy and want to thank you for being part of the group to say, hey, let's get back to this in August.
So we really appreciate it. This is a great venue to get our word out and hopefully inform some sports fans on topics beyond the scores.
Well, and we're going to talk about something that's really interesting, I think, today. We're going to talk a lot about performance-enhancing drugs and kind of the good, bad, and ugly and some myths. And I don't know a lot about it. And, you hear PED a lot and you think, oh, okay. Well, he must have did that, or he didn't do it, or he's being accused. And I want to talk to you. I've got a number of questions for you, and we'll get to that throughout the show. But before we do, if we could talk a little bit about your bio. You're an Ohio guy, and that's good. You're a Cleveland Cavalier, Cleveland Brown, Cincinnati Bengal, which one or both?
Browns.
Yeah. So that's been a little tough, as our producer giggles a little bit. But you know what? It's a proud storied. It really is. It's a franchise that needs to get back to where they used to be.
Well, I would tell you that being a sports fan in Northern Ohio is a pretty difficult task. It's a little bit easier here in Wisconsin, but other than Ohio State, I haven't had a whole lot of championships in my 40 some years.
No, you haven't. But you know what? I don't know if it's this year, but I still think that LeBron gets one of the Cavaliers.
We'll see.
It's gonna be tough this year, man.
A lot of animosity in that locker room, and you need a little bit better chemistry to win a championship.
Yeah, there are some problems there.
Absolutely,
there is. Yeah, and I think as he comes out and says, "I want to play with this guy and this guy and this guy." If he'd finish that by saying, "I hope to bring him here to Cleveland with me," I think that would serve him better.
Yeah, he likes to stir the pot a little bit. And, just like we'll be talking later today, there's a lot more to athletics than just talent. And chemistry and the way you interact with your teammates are a big part of winning.
I agree with you. And as a basketball coach, I can have the most talented team. And if these guys can't wait to get out of practice because they don't want to hang out with each other, and they all go their separate ways, I've got no shot.
Yeah, the Yankees learned that year after year. They brought in huge talent, huge money, and were not winning. And then they switched back to finding chemistry, and they have begun winning again.
Hey, you're back, and again, you grew up in Ohio. How early in your life did you know that becoming an orthopedic surgeon is something you wanted to do?
I think it started when I was playing high school baseball. I blew out my ankle and really got to interact with our team physician. It was a good interaction because it allowed me to get back very quickly. I got back for the beginning of my season. My first at bat, I hit a home run. I sent the ball to that guy, and it was a great way for me to see the other side because I had been living pretty much a charmed life as far as injury before that. Those type of interactions with the people, the trainers and therapists, allowed me to have some vision of what I might want to do for other people as I grew up.
It's interesting. In my real job, I'm a sales rep here at Entercom, and I do a program with Pick and Save called Partners in Health, and we talk to individual pharmacists. And I talked to a pharmacist, and we taped this, and I asked him kind of a similar question, and he said when he was little, there was a small independent pharmacy by their house, and he watched as the pharmacist interacted with his mom and how he helped his mom and the family, and he realized at that point that that's what he wanted to do, and he's been a pharmacist now for 25 years. But he goes back in his mind to that moment when he was 10 years old watching this pharmacist help him. And it's interesting that, you know, you watched as this guy tried to get you back on the field and said, man, he's helping people. I want to be able to do that.
Well, you know, that's a great lesson. Just like the physician helped me, as teachers, physicians, parents, coaches, we need to really maintain that we are have kids that are working with us that are very malleable, and they're going to take a lot of the good as well as the bad and put it forth in their life. So let's make sure we put a lot of good to them.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the stuff that you guys do at Mosh for the high schools in this area, and not just the things that people see, you know, not just the fact that you guys are on the sidelines for the majority of high school football games and are available for high school basketball and other sports, but there are things that you guys do behind the scenes that nobody knows about, that you're impacting these young people's lives in a really positive way.
Yeah, we appreciate hearing that. Our a lot of our goals, our people see us as surgeons, and we're just fixing on the back end. But the majority of our work is done on the front end in prevention, education, safety for our athletes, and this at the high school, collegiate, and professional levels.
You know, and I said this last week on the show, but I need to say it with you here. You guys, you're in that Mosh bubble. You know, that's what you do. That's you live in that bubble. Because of this show, I'm up to now 23 new clients that I know of personally because of this show that are now Mosh clients. And it's either people who have listened to the show, friends of mine that listen to the show, people I work with that I've highly recommend that they go see a doctor or go see the people at Mosh. And out of the 23, I can honestly tell you that 17 or 18 have either reached out to me via cell phone, sent me emails, sent me a text that said, that's different. That's totally, is it because of you? And I go, no, it's not because of me. They think that I've got all this pull that I can, you know, call you and say, hey, treat this person nicely. That's just the way you guys do business. And I think it's important that you understand that you live in that bubble, and you might not know this, but what you guys do is different, and you do it really well.
Well, we truly appreciate that. We want to reach out to patients, even if they're not going to be in our office, to give them some information, educate them on sports and injuries, and hopefully they're able to work with us because we think we can take great care of them.
I have to tell you this. This is the latest one. This just came to me yesterday. There's a woman that I work with here, and she did not hear what she wanted to hear. It was not. She had seen somebody a year ago, and that person said, look, if you do this and do this and this, and your knee's going to be better. And she did what that person said for a year and said, it's not any better. And I said, you need to go see the people at Mosh, and she did. And she saw them late Thursday. And yesterday she called me in her office and she said, I'm not happy. And I said, why? And she said, you know, here's what the guy at Mosh told me. And that's not what I wanted to hear. And I said, well, the guy a year ago told you what you did want to hear. How'd that work out for you? And she said, look, I understand that he's being honest and truthful with me. But it's just not exactly what I wanted to hear. And I need to now pivot and do a whole different thing. So,
well, good personal interactions are not being a yes man as a physician. It's being brutally honest. You don't have to be malicious in your honesty, but certainly being straightforward to people, and most people will appreciate that and come back.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, before we get to a break, I have got a couple of questions, some NBA players that I wanted to talk to you about. The first is Anthony Davis. You know, he's out for the year now. And they are talking, he had surgery on his left knee, and they talked about it. His left shoulder, he has a torn labrum in his shoulder, and they're talking about this happened probably in college, and he's been playing through it, and there's not a lot, I guess, they can do with it. He's going to have to play through the pain, but the long-standing shoulder problem unfortunately means Davis is probably more injury-prone than they thought. The fact that he had a torn labrum for middle of college, so there through the first 2 years in the NBA, does that surprise you?
It's not uncommon. The majority of these athletes, especially the supersized athletes like Mr. Davis, put a lot of load on their body. Most of them come into the NBA, NFL, NHL with some injuries. Some are prioritized as far as limiting their actions, but labral tears, if they're minor, as long as there's not pain and swelling, they'll allow them to play on. And it's really about risk reward for the athlete. They have to decide if it's worth proceeding if they're not having a lot of symptoms, understanding they may need intervention later. Also, these guys, as they come into the NBA, are very young. Most of them are their teens and late teens, early 20s. And the young body can tolerate a lot more than the older body. And as they transition to the NBA, the load of the players they're playing against is significantly higher. The frequency they're playing, both in practice as well as gameplay, and then their ancillary play, Olympics and USA teams during the summer, significantly increases. So the potential for injury increases as well.
Do you know, it's interesting because when you say a torn labrum, can you explain what the labrum is first?
Certainly. The ball and socket joint, if you think about a ball sitting on a bowl, it'll kind of sit on a plate and move around. If you put a lip around that plate, that's the labrum or the lip. Labrum is lip in Latin. And so what that does is increases the stability of the ball in the socket. When you get a tear in that ball has a tendency to be a little bit more unstable. Pull that labrum and create pain. The motion of the ball can create pain, but also the pulling of the labrum. And then you get inflammation, diminished motion, and the inability to participate.
Do you have four? Shoulders?
There's two in the shoulder and two in the hips.
Okay. Because Kayvon Looney, who Milwaukee Hamilton went to UCLA, and now is with the Golden State Warriors, he had a surgery for his labrum in his right hip, and he was out 4 to 6 months, and that was August 20th, 2015. They recalled him up to the Golden State Warriors on March 14th, and now he's still in and out of games with a sore hip, but he went to the D-League and got himself ready to play, and they called him up just a couple weeks ago. Time-wise, does that surprise you?
Not uncommon at all. If you look at the majority of professional athletes that have labral tears in their hip, 6 to 8 months is a reasonable time frame. You know, Michael Carter Williams just had this by Dr. Philippon at the Stedman Clinic in Colorado, and he's going to be out quite a while as well. Alex Rodriguez had this 5 or 6 years ago. So did Kurt Warner. These guys, it takes at least a season to get back almost. Just because the amount of loads they put across it, especially these leaping athletes in the NBA.
Hey, before we get to a break, I wanted to talk about Blake Griffin a little bit, but I think I'll go past that one because he's an idiot and he broke his hand.
I don't know how you prevent that one.
Yeah, I don't know either. Chris Bosh, this one I just have some questions regarding it. He remains on blood thinners, but it says he's still hopefully returned this season. But he's not going to be able to return as long as he's on blood thinners. He had clotting in his calf, and I'm wondering. You don't hear professional athletes on blood thinners a lot, do you?
Well, this is a nice segue to showing that athletes are people. I mean, we forget about it. We see the colors and we see the flashy lights. These are all humans, and they have human problems. And Chris Bosh, he just developed blood clots for no apparent reason. He didn't have an injury. It just came out of the blue. And his actually showed up initially a few years ago with blood clots that actually traveled to his lungs. And it was very significantly life-threatening, and they have recurred. He's had to go back on blood thinners. And when you're on blood thinners, to be able to do a contact sport like basketball is very high risk because potential bleeds into the brain if there's a contact injury or a fall, so they can't let them participate in those type of sports.
How would he have known that he had blood clots?
Certainly I believe his presentation a couple years ago, he was having a lot of shortness of breath. They had taken him in for a workup for asthma and those type of problems, and they found out he had blood clots. And with that, they shut him down, put him on blood thinners, and now he's on commercials with Arnold Palmer.
Yeah. And do you know what's interesting is it says that though the clotting in Bosh's calf has lessened, so they must have realized something was in the calf there.
Yeah, when they recurred this year, he began to have calf pain. They typically get swelling. And these are a couple of the hallmark findings of people with DVT or deep venous thrombosis or blood clots in their legs. And it's one of the things we worry about in our patients.
I did that one. Jumped off the page because I didn't understand, and that's not something that you hear about turn ankles or you hear about ACLs, you hear about that, but somebody on a blood thinner who's trying to get back and play in the NBA, it's just not something to hear much about.
Athletes don't just have injuries. They also get ill. And we have to remember that these are human bodies.
Hey, Dr. Eric Pfeifel is in the studio. When we get to a break, other side of the break, we're going to talk about PEDs. And, you know, I've got a number of questions just as somebody who you hear about them a lot, but you don't really know a lot about them. And we're going to talk about, you know, why players use them, why they try. There's a great upside if you don't get caught, I guess, but the recovery and the advantage of using them, and we'll talk to you about that on the other side of the break. He's Dr. Eric Pfeifel. You can get more information, go to mymosh.com, and there's a bio on Dr. Pfeifel. You were named one of the top doctors. I just saw that on your website, by the way. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What award was that from?
That's from Milwaukee Magazine, yeah. And it's voted on by our peers.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that.
Appreciate it.
Well done. Yeah, I don't think I got that from any of the radio people. I'll keep looking, though.
I'll vote for you.
Yeah, for that Milwaukee Nary Home Improvement Show. That's where I should get it for. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small, and the ones that mother gives you.
Well, welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I don't think this is the song you recommended, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Is it White Rabbit?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. From Jefferson Airplane?
This is it.
I'll be darned. There's a theme here, and you'll figure it out if you keep listening. Music brought to you by Dr. Eric Pfeifel. You know, come August when we restart the show back up again, we got to figure out if I'm still fired on the music. With McCarty gone, he'll be in California. He can't yell at me anymore.
No, but I will love to do the music. That's good. My favorite part.
Well, I'm going to be offended by it. No, that's a good choice right there. White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane. Again, go to mymosh.com. For more information on Dr. Eric Pfeifel. Dr. Pfeifel, we hear about PEDs all the time. And you hear, is Peyton Manning, he did. You know, all of the baseball that went on for years. And I don't know if people understand it. I know that I don't completely understand it. I understand that it's something that players take to try to get back from injury, to get bigger and stronger, but I don't really know what a PED is. So can you explain, first of all, can you explain that?
Absolutely. And certainly the first part thing I want to say is PEDs are bad for sports. We're here to talk about it to make sure people understand I do not like them, and I think they're going to be detrimental. So what is a PED? PED is a performance-enhancing drug. It's something to allow someone in their job to be better at what they do. It's not just for sports. They're used in the military. They're used for air traffic controllers in order for people to stay alert and ready. In sports, it's typically based on performance and improvement of their skills. The majority of PEDs that we hear about are anabolic steroids like testosterone, HGH, or human growth hormone. Both of those are for strength and recovery. There are athletes that use amphetamines like Adderall to increase their stamina or alertness. Skill athletes like riflists or golfers may use beta blockers to increase their heart rate so they're more steady. And then cyclists or endurance athletes may use EPO, which is a blood doping, to increase their endurance.
Can I ask you, when the whole thing started coming out with Lance Armstrong, none of that surprised you, I'm sure.
Not at all. I mean, in the cycling world, this has been rampant. And just like everything, the action is much easier than the reaction. So the majority of these societies that regulate sports and the medications their athletes take are trying to keep up. In cycling, it was rampant. They were able to continually find a drug they couldn't test for, and but finally, people caught up because what happens in big business, people get swept under the rug, they get tired of it, and then they report the athletes.
You know, doing some research for this show, I read this article about a pitcher by the name of Ryan Matson. And he, in 2012, had a Tommy John surgery, signed with the Angels, expecting to be healthy to begin that season. And it didn't happen. And 14 months after removed from the surgery, he said, I can't believe it's taken this long. And he went on to be quoted where, and this is where I'm getting to with this because I want to get your opinion. He says if HGH were legal, just in the process of healing under a doctor's recommendation in the right dosage while you're on the disabled list, I don't think that's such a bad thing as long as it doesn't have any lasting side effects, negative type side effects. Your thought on that?
Well, there's a couple in that. One, certainly HGH can help people recover faster. The problem is the Federal Drug Administration has not deemed that recovery for injury is one of the ways that medication should be used. So that's the first hurdle. It's illegal to use in this capacity. Two, it's against the rules for the athletes to use because it's in their contract that they set forth with Major League Baseball. And then the third is you have to think about any medication, they have side effects. And when used in high enough doses to help with healing, what happens is you start to get the secondary problems of a medication. And so you have to get through all those hurdles before a medication is cleared to be utilized for these athletes.
Can you look at an athlete, a Barry Bonds? Could you watch his progression to where he was about 175-pound, kind of a lightning-quick bat, normal-sized head player to where he ended his career and watch and see the progression and knowing what you know before most people know?
I think the yes is the answer in some cases. Certainly that is a significant one because we were able to watch him in the profile for 20 years or so. So if you look at his 1991 Fleer baseball card from when he's on the Pirates, he looks like a young man that just graduated high school and was a part of the Killer Bees. He was awesome. If you look at his 2004 Giants card, his head is about three times bigger with a huge forehead. If you ask the trainers and equipment managers, his shoe size and glove size have changed probably five or six sizes. And in that case, you can look at the secondary effects. And that's the problem with these medications is they have side effects. Some are visible, but the majority of them are not visible like that.
Do you know, I constantly hear that the cheaters and the people supplying them are always a step or two ahead. They're always coming up with something new that's not going to be caught, not getting in a masking agent, I think is the term that they use. Does that surprise you that there's so much money in it? It's unbelievable, right?
Well, this just goes back to the root of the problem. The root of the problem, in the 1920s, sports was a pastime and a minor business. Now it is one of the most, the largest business. The NFL is worth about $20 billion, I believe, now. So when big business is that big, people want to make money. One way to do that is to beat the system. Just like in sports, offense is way easier than defense because offense is action and defense is reaction. Just like doping is action. So if they find a way around it, either by doing micro doses that are under the radar of the testing, blocking agents, or using agents that aren't tested for, it's much easier for them to succeed in performance enhancement. Compared to the agents that are agencies that are a little bit delayed.
Hey, you know what? We're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, I've got a zillion questions for you. We could probably go 3 hours on this, but the question we're going to lead with is what kind of company is developing these, knowing they're going to be illegal, and is it just follow the money on stuff like that? And I'll get your opinion on that on the other side of the break. You can tweet Dr. Eric Pfeifel questions, hashtag SportsMedRadio, that we can get answered here in the next half hour. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Well, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. I love to hear the thunder. Watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good.
I love rainy nights. Well, I love rabbit. Rainy night. You're getting the theme? There's no doubt you're getting the theme. Wait till you hear the next one, brought to you by Logan and...
Camden
and Logan. They're the Pifle Boys. They brought the next music, but this one is from Dr. Eric Pifle. Happy Easter, by the way.
Happy Easter.
People don't get it. So we're talking about PEDs, and my question before the break was, who's developing these, and is there a reason for them to develop these for good, or are they doing it just to make money?
Well, you know, yes is the answer, and I would tell you that large companies, standard pharmaceutical companies are making this because these medications are necessary. There are people that aren't able to grow. There are people that don't make testosterone, and these medications are necessary. The problem is they're not always used for good. Just like any tool in our toolbox, you can use it for good or bad. And when it comes to sports, the majority of these are used for bad. Now, there are offshoots of these large companies that take those medications that are used for a just cause, alter them so they aren't able to be screened for, and then they create a need because of the big business of sports. So companies like Balco, as you heard with Barry Bonds, or Biogenesis with Ryan Braun, those are companies that are offshoots that have taken medications, figured out a way to implement them so hopefully they are not found during screening processes, and have found a niche. The problem is it's in that gray area outside of medicine and that gray area outside of sports where they're really not doing anything illegal if they have the right diagnosis, but they are doing things against the rules.
Yeah, and those guys are in jail, right?
Right. Well, I mean, the majority of the people giving the drugs out were not practitioners. They weren't physicians or physician assistants or nurse practitioners. They were trainers or even people with no medical knowledge other than the biochemistry.
Right.
And those people go to jail because they do things off the books against the federal government.
And probably in cash only type situations. In that article with Ryan Mattson that I read, and I want to know if this has changed, because that article was in 2012, so it was a while ago, but it says this: the science is far from cut and dried. There have been remarkably few large-scale studies on the short and long-term effects of HGH usage.
That is true, and certainly in the last 3 years, with the amount of publicity HGH has gotten, there are going to be ongoing studies to look at it. The problem for things like this, the medications we use day to day, it's usually a 10 to 15-year process to figure out what they can be used for, if they're safe, do trials. These will not be quick studies. These take a lot of money, and until they are done in a scientific manner, they won't be ready. And if you, even then, it may not be appropriate to use in the sporting venue, just because side effect profiles. So, you know, this is not going to be a quick thing if they choose to do that, and I don't think that they will.
You know, it's interesting, and I'll just quote this article one more time, but it says that, you know, his career, the window is closed for him, and it says if there isn't a flaw in his argument, it's where he draws the line, where he says not steroids, no steroids now. So that really kind of, I don't think he understands what he was talking about.
Yeah, I think as soon as you begin to alter the biologic process through chemicals, that is where you need to draw the line. Certainly increasing training regimens, doing training at low oxygen environments, those type of things are physiologic. When you start adding chemicals, injections to the mix, that's where we're making almost robotic humans. And if we want to start going there, that is a very, very slippery slope.
Do you think that these are rampant throughout professional and collegiate sports?
I believe that they are fairly widespread in use. I think it is lesser than it was in the 1990s because of the screening processes. But as we've talked, this is a big business. People are going to find a way around the screening, and including the microdoses, the blocking agents. So I think it's rampant. It's not as bad as it was, but everyone's going to look for an advantage. I mean, we just saw the guy from Henry Mejia from the Mets just got banned for life.
Yes, for life.
Why did he do that? He was looking for contract. He was trying to get money, and he took a chance again for his third time.
Right.
I mean, if anything tells you, this is a guy that was trying to make money and he took a chance. So it's still there.
When you think back on the Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire time, when you couldn't turn the TV on with watching that race, who was going to win the home run crown, do you blame Major League Baseball for that? Do you blame those individual players or a combination of all?
Well, I think we need to blame everyone, and that includes us as sports fans. Baseball was dying at that time.
Yes.
It was almost dead, and they were losing young people to other sports, football and basketball. When that occurred, it reignited the love for baseball. Now, part of the reason is that we loved it. We loved the animosity between two players and a race, and it was almost presidential. But we were part of that. They understood who wanted what, so they took the medications, and Major League Baseball turned their eye from it. So I think we're all to blame, and we all have to be part of the solution.
Do you know what's interesting to me is, so then the government gets involved and they call the hearings, and, you know, guys vehemently denied, no, never have, or I don't understand English. And then Andy Pettit with the Yankees came out and said, yes, I did. And do you know what? I did it to get back on the field. I knew it was wrong when I did it. It won't happen again. I apologize to my fans, to my family, to my organization. And he's never even talked about now in that group, because he's the guy that stood up and said, right in front to the camera, and said, I'm guilty. I did that. And here's why I did it. This is what my mindset was. And it will not happen again. And I apologize to everybody that I hurt because of this. People have now given him a pass because he wasn't one of the ones trying to run and hide and lie about it. And the other guys, the Roger Clemens of the world, people are still, you know, of course he did it.
Right. And, you know, the court of public opinion is very important in these type of things, especially baseball, where so much of it's based on personal stats. We also don't vilify Jose Canseco anymore. Why? He was the whistleblower.
Right.
He brought this all out. He was a horrible utilizer of PEDs, but people have given him a pass with time, because he has actually shown us the way of all the things that occurred. And, you know, certainly these guys use PEDs for many reasons. But when they lie about them, when people know that it's going on, you aren't going to get into the Hall of Fame.
You're not. Last question before we get to a break. How does a player, if you're in college or in minor league baseball, how do you know who to go to on something like that? Is it just locker room talk? Is it the trainer? Is it guys that hang around the locker room? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, if somebody wanted to buy illegal drugs on the street, whether it's marijuana or whatever, they've got to know somebody to know somebody to figure that thing out. I guess you got to ask the right questions.
Yeah, you know, I think it's who you know. Certainly, each level you're at, you know, certainly we're not seeing this rampant at the peewee level or the juniors level, but as kids are getting into high school and getting towards a scholarship, five-star athletes, those type of things, they have more people around them.
Right.
Just like we see pro athletes with their entourage starts typically in high school. That entourage has entourage, and they figure people out. So hopefully it's not trainers. Hopefully it's not coaches and those type of personnel anymore. But it's typically the people that kind of hang around and help figure out building networks for these athletes as they go to the next level. You know, I thankfully don't know much about this. I don't want to be involved in it. If I knew about it, I would be horrifically sad to know that people around me were doing it. But it's typically the people that are laying in the weeds and fringe that help these athletes, but also discussing with other athletes as they get to high school, college, and the pros.
Hey, let's get to a break. This is a really interesting conversation to me, because it you know, it is part of the core of what a lot of us are really involved in. I love high school athletics because I think it's the purest of all.
I agree.
I just, and if you listen to the station, you know my love for it. And I think that that's really where kids play, just because they want to play.
Absolutely.
And they want to just perform with their buddies and for their school. So we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Eric Pifel. On the other side of the break, the music is brought to you by Logan and Camden.
Yes.
10-year-old Logan or 10-year-old Camden?
10-year-old Logan, 8-year-old Camden.
And what is your wife's name?
Tiffany.
Are they listening, you think?
They should be.
Tiffany, Logan, and Camden, music coming from you guys on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail. Hippity-hoppity, Easter's on its way.
Logan and Camden Piper. This music is brought to you by 10-year-old Logan, 8-year-old Camden. Happy Easter, boys. I hope you find every egg you can find, man. You got big plans for Easter?
Oh, Easter egg hunt, brunch. We're going to do a egg drop and see if we can make a mechanism so it doesn't break when it hits the concrete.
It's awesome. There you go. That's perfect. He's Dr. Eric Pifel. More information on him, go to mymosh.com. We still have time if you want to tweet us a question at hashtag SportsMedRadio. We can get any questions you have for Dr. Eric Pifel. We can get those answered. We've been talking specifically on PEDs. The other article that I pulled, and this one's a little bit old as well, but it jumped off the page because we all know Ray Lewis. And he tore his tricep muscle. He was 37 years old and announced his retirement. When he tore it, he baffled, this is what the article says, he baffled the doctors and split the normal recovery time by 50%. And there are now reports, and this was back a few years ago, that SWAT, S-W-A-T, was the provider of his PEDs that got him back in. I've never heard of that company, have you?
These are the fringe companies that provide stuff to athletes, just like Balco.
It's interesting because Tim Allen is in the hallway, and Tim wanted to come in studio here and talk about the whole Ryan Braun thing, and I said, no, you're not coming in. But he said, and we kind of went through this earlier in the show, he said, why don't they go after the companies that manufacture these? And I told him that they manufacture them under the umbrella that they are legal for people that need them.
Yeah, you know, certainly that is just like a lot of companies around the world, they're fronts, and they have a legitimate business model, and they probably have some fringe business models as well. And, you know, it's hard to go after them until someone gets caught. So as soon as someone gets caught, then usually the DEA or the federal government will get involved. But just like the athletes, until someone gets caught, they don't know where to look.
What are they made of? We talked during a break with Billy about a couple of things, and I'm reading this, and they're talking about deer antler spray, and they're talking about a number of different ways.
Right. I mean, a lot of these are derived from biologic substances, and with Ray Lewis, it was a deer antler, which is some type of hormonal spray. I don't absolutely remember the components of it, but when you use those things, certainly when you're putting a substance that's not regulated by the DEA, that's from another animal, into your body, the side effect profile is unknown. And I'm not sure what happened. I mean, it's pretty crazy, the recovery. Maybe he's just superhuman, kind of like Adrian Peterson with his ACL. But, you know, there are outliers. But this did not seem like an outlier situation.
No, that did not. As these people continue to make things, I think sports is getting better at identifying it, and they're getting better at the suspensions and the banning, and they understand the seriousness behind it. But as you talked about last segment, there's still going to be guys that are going for broke. And if it's, you know, they want to make one more contract or they want to continue playing at a high level, it almost seems like they can rationalize anything on this.
Well, you know, it's like any decision we make in life, it's risk-reward. So if a guy is at the end of his career, the guy is at a contract season, the guy has a backup quarterback that looks like he's going to take his job, they're going to many times choose the wrong way to succeed. And in that type of situation, a PED seems like a reasonable option when they're talking to that little devil on their shoulder.
Do you get asked about it very often?
About PEDs?
Yeah. Do you get asked as doctor, does anybody try to feel you out about them prior to, you know, understanding, once they understand that, like you said in the first segment, you're totally against this. I mean, do you ever have people start to talk to you and feel you out about it?
I think that a lot of patients, especially higher level athletes, will talk about some of the fringe medicine that isn't well documented. So fringe medicine, like beginning to use biologics like PRP, stem cell treatment, which are probably the future and make much more sense than true PEDs. To me, that's where the majority of the discussion is. I have honestly probably only had one or two discussions about HGH in my office with higher level athletes, and I steer them away immediately.
Yeah, I think that, boy, it's a industry that makes a lot of money for people. And I think players, if they think that, boy, this is getting to the end for me, or I need to get back on the field, they can justify that in their own head, especially when you, as you talked about, you know, everybody's got these policies now, and there's, you know, four other guys going, hey, you know what, this is, hey, I did a little research, don't worry about it, let's get you back playing. And it's kind of scary because they don't know what's going to happen, you know, 10, 15 years down the road.
Right. And another thing you brought up earlier is how do we regulate this, and who's to blame, and who do we need to take care of? Well, certainly we have to look to the organizations, NFL, NHL, and have increasing stringent policies. So increase their ability to find it, increase the penalties to where they're almost, you know, going to like the IOC. IOC, you get one chance. If you fail it, you get 2 years off. And after that, you're banned. Athletes are not going to lose you 2 years if they use a illegal substance, because that's half of the career for majority of the players. So if you make them that stringent, they won't use them.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, this is the first time since we've been doing this show that we talked extensively about this, and I appreciate your willingness to do that, Dr. Pfeifel, and we'll continue conversations in the future. Two quick questions. How are the Cleveland Indians going to do this year?
Second in the Central.
Second in the Central. NCAA, who's your pick?
Oregon.
Really? Mine was Michigan State. How do you think I'm doing in my
pool? Well, you may not want to listen to me. I chose Michigan State, too.
Oh, God, you and me, baby. That's awesome. You know what? I have to be honest. I had Kansas. And then President Obama took Kansas, so I changed it because I don't know if he's done a lot of right things in my view. So I changed it, and darn it, he might be right the way they're playing.
Yes.
North Carolina looks good, too. That's awesome. Go Ducks. You know what? I'm going to start rooting for Virginia now with Tony Bennett. That's what I'll do.
Deal.
Thank you so much again. This show comes back on the air beginning of August, and it's coming back as the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. I want to thank everybody at Maj for that. I'll see you in a few months.
Thanks, Mac.
Have a good summer.
Have a good summer. Thank
Again,
you.
Again, Dr. Eric Pfeifel, mymosh.com. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.